IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Good morning, everybody, and this is Sara Gone Rogue. With me, Sara Gone. So it's a bit, little bit funny weather out here, but the weather in France must be even worse. The president of France, Emmanuel Macron, now has no government. His prime minister went for a vote of confidence, and by an overwhelming majority, the parties in the French government did not support it. So the government has effectively collapsed. And this is the man who's now going to the UN shortly, and he spearheaded the sudden recognition of a Palestinian state based on the ever-reliable undertakings of one Mahmoud Abbas. So, who's he going to be representing when he goes there? Apparently, the right-wing party under Marine Le Pen, is considering putting forward a motion of impeachment against Macron, and apparently there has never been since the Second World War, there has never been an impeachment of a French president. So, big problems to worry about, I guess. And talking about the Mkhwanazi, let's call it the Mkhwanazi Commission of Inquiry that's about to start, albeit somewhat late because of IT-related problems. The question has been raised as to really how good a cop Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi has been. He's the top cop in KZN, and questions have been asked and research is being done that indicates that the murder rate had been coming down over the past 5 years, and that all other sort of what contact crimes, such as rape and attempted murder, assault and robbery, have steadily got worse over the period of his most recent period of quarterly period of action or inaction. It's also the public trust in the police, which is at an all-time, which is pretty low. 63% of South Africans don't trust the police in general. The amount for KZN is higher still. And if you look at, consider how fractious and dangerous a province it is, maybe one has to just look at General Nkrazi with a little bit of skepticism. The public trust in him in KZN has gone or deteriorated significantly over his 7 years. And during the first 2 years, crime apparently increased significantly in general. So the reversal of the trend of the years prior to appointment does raise some questions.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
We have talked about the fact that ArcelorMittal in Newcastle is shut down. But I want to just look at a couple of issues because it's also an illustration of why government should not be in business. That, you know, the idea of the stale, tired cliche about controlling the commanding heights of the economy just ensures that ultimately that policy invariably results in disaster. The ANC government has always supported ArcelorMittal, and it is that support that prevented it from really partaking in and being subject to a competitive environment. And the competitive environment is what a market economy thrives on. You either adjust to the changing times or you go in, and it may sound harsh, but it's the only way to ensure that over the long run things keep running. New players come in and old players adapt or don't. That is how things work, and it is based on the impetus, the ambition and the foresight of individuals who understand the industries that they're in. Now, the problem that ArcelorMittal faced was that the underlying problem was global oversupply. World production is now outstripping demand by 70 million tons annually. And South Africa's crude steel output fell 32% in the 10 years between 2014 and 2023. And then we've had local demand, which, you know, you can imagine there's local demand has just been plummeting. Stagnant investment. Stagnant is probably a kind way of saying it. A moribund construction sector, which has, in its travails has included construction mafia. Tariffs from the government, and the, who's been, and the government has been blaming cheap Chinese imports on the problems of our local market not coming to the party. So in every respect, this policy has backfired. It's raised costs for hundreds of smaller steel fabricators who rely on affordable inputs and collectively support far more jobs than ArcelorMittal does. So we've essentially been reduced to what would be called a mid-tier producer of steel, and mid-tier producers include the United Kingdom and the United Arab Emirates. There is nothing that the Newcastle site produced that could not be sourced more cheaply abroad. And that's the reality of the market, that when you're being propped up by government and bailed out by government, you are not, and essentially controlled, nothing is going to help you to adjust to that change. And then when you've got the logistical bottlenecks of rail, ports, and congested highways, you really the disaster is pretty much predictable. And looking at the dreadful story of the assassination of the attorney involved in the insolvency business rescue proceedings of one NTC Global Trade Fund, Boa van Niekerk, who was assassinated last week. Two men, who'd been accompanied by two others and who were waiting in the car, came into his office. He thought it was a meeting regarding the matter from interested parties, and they shot him to death. And this is probably the 11th or 12th such assassination of similar types of people involved in the investigation of failing and corrupt businesses. We remember the father and son of the Clutees of a couple of years ago, and they were murdered on a highway, and their murder has not been solved. And there are numerous office holders in government and in the insolvency industry that has made the organization responsible for the standards of the industry wondering what on earth are they going to do to protect people and keep them in the industry, because invariably they are subject to threats, and eventually the threats take their toll and people do resign from these cases. I'm not entirely sure if the idea is that somehow monies that are owed to investors or clients or customers is going to be paid out any quicker, having assassinated poor Mr. van Niekerk, or whether it's just going to delay things further and bring them to a standstill, in which case I'm not sure what will have been achieved. I guess with the sort of players involved in what has been considered, is regarded in this case as a Ponzi scheme, you know, it's a nightmare, and it's a reflection of the general decay in morality that has been enabled by corruption, cadre deployment, mismanagement, incompetence, etc. And it's very, very worrying. You don't know when you're going to come up against anybody that could be disgruntled by a process like this. Apparently a very good young man and very very upright, very knowledgeable. So it is truly sad. It is tragic. And I don't know where we go to from here in that respect. You might be interested to know that much of the weaponry that is devastating the Cape Flats, that is seeing huge amounts of guns and ammunition entering the Cape Flats, is coming through from the Namibian military. They're on Namibian military and police weapons, and they include MK-47s and pistols, and they're hidden among flour and fruit shipments that come over the border. There's also smuggling networks involved in trafficking diamonds, abalone, as well as people, which is implicating truck companies with links to gang leaders. So I think the obviously has to be policed hugely, and I gather that the Western Cape government is putting in place a whole lot of new policemen, policewomen, groups of people to fight these crime waves. But unless you can get to it at source with really good intel, and it's always intel and cooperation from people within the community, those are the only ways you get enough information to actually make a difference. And it can be argued in any event, and I think this is important to understand, that the criminality that gets through is relying on the police at the end of the process. So many other factors come into play that result in the criminality. One, obviously, is the opportunities the people and gangs see in being able to enter the space in this way. And we are becoming renowned for being a criminal gang, criminal mafia, one of the centers of the world in this regard. So none too surprising there. But it's time to look across the border and speak to the authorities there for some cooperation.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I read an article last week about the demise of the ANC, or the pending demise of the ANC. It was written by my ex-colleague, the CEO of the IRR, John Endres. John, welcome. Before I go into the nuts and bolts of the article entitled Collapse Dynamics and the End of the ANC. And I think it's very pertinent, obviously, to our audience, because they're wondering if what they're seeing is the heading towards the end of the ANC. Does this process really confirm Ernest Hemingway's famous quote from The Sun Also Rises, where he said, how did you go bankrupt? Two ways, gradually and then suddenly. So are we looking at the moral bankruptcy of the ANC going suddenly accelerating?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's where the notion comes from. And there's a parallel idea that exists in many different formats. And so what Hemingway described, Malcolm Gladwell, for example, described as a tipping point, right? So something is stable, and then there's a tipping point, and it falls over, and then it's in a new state. Maybe it's lying on the floor, depending on what the change is. And another way of describing that is called a punctuated equilibrium. That is what biologists like to talk about. And they'll say that, you know, a certain species hangs around for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years and doesn't change very much. And then suddenly it completely changes or disappears or turns into something else. And that's sort of quite surprising, because you think that these things happen gradually. But when you look at the fossil record, you see that these changes are sometimes very sudden. And that, of course, also happens in social dynamics, so in organizations and societies, etc., where things look quite stable for a long time, and then, you know, you wake up one morning and suddenly everything's different. And a couple of examples there, of course, are the fall of the Berlin Wall, you know, where for 40 years you had communism in East Germany, and it seemed like it was going to be like that forever. And then the 9th of November comes along, and it's a sort of a cold and drizzly night in Berlin, and suddenly you get these images on TV of people, you know, with their hands tearing down that wall. And that happened almost overnight. And we had a similar experience here in South Africa with at the end of apartheid, you know, where Nelson Mandela seemed destined to spend the rest of his life in jail. Then comes the 2nd of February 1990, and F.W. de Klerk gives his famous speech, and he announces the unbanning of the ANC and the release of political prisoners, and suddenly everything changes. And this is a bit of a feeling that you get with the ANC, where for a long time they were giving up a few percentage points in each election, bit by bit, and it seemed pretty stable. But then comes 2024, and they lose 17 percentage points of their previous support. That's quite a lot. And maybe now we think, you know, that was it, and they're going to stabilize at 40. But my impression is that maybe they're not going to stabilize at 40, and they'll continue falling. And that is where this sort of outlook comes from, that it may be that for the ANC, things are going to change very fast now, much faster than anybody expects, and probably also faster than the ANC itself expects. Sara.
I think we probably commonly consider the election last year to have been the indication of the tipping point. But my impression is that the plunge really got going, if not specifically with any particular event, but with the failure by the ANC to really make the GNU work as a collaborative exercise. There's been a lot of support by South Africans and in the media for the GNU and for the idea of the GNU, and particularly by virtue of the fact that the main coalition partner is the Democratic Alliance. Would you agree with me, or was there something that the ANC specifically did that sort of caused the graph to drip right down?
So, yeah, I think it's multiple factors that cause it to drop, and it's sort of a confluence of more and more reinforcing factors that cause it to continue along that route. But I think you're quite right that the GNU was an opportunity for the ANC to reverse that trend. And there's only one way to reverse that trend, and that is to show some delivery, show some performance, show some improvements. And as long as the ANC can't do that, it is going to continue to suffer from declining voter support. But of course, there are many factors playing a role here. And so, you know, we see, for example, ANC staff members, employees not getting paid. So there's those financial troubles. Then you see service providers suing the ANC over unpaid bills once again. You know, that's like a repeat of what happened ahead of the 2021 local government elections. We see the Trump administration piling massive pressure on the ANC over Israel, but also over expropriation without compensation, over affirmative action and BEE. That's another pressure point. Then you've got pressure from the left, so MK and EFF, you know, are threatening the ANC and telling them that they made a huge mistake by working with the DA, and they're saying that, you know, people are going to lynch them for that. Plus, internally as well, we see lots of trouble. So the 2024 annual report of the ANC, which was released a few weeks ago, says that there are only three provinces in South Africa now where ANC membership is over 100,000. And that was Limpopo as the biggest province, KwaZulu-Natal, and the Eastern Cape. But then last week, we get a report out of the Eastern Cape saying that ANC membership there has dropped below 100,000, and that about 300 of roughly 650 branches in that province are not in good standing. So you can just sense like the pressure is piling on from so many directions, and you hear it in the language that the ANC used to talk about itself as well. So in that annual report, you can find the word crisis used 20 times, including the expression an existential crisis for the ANC. Then you get Senzo Mthunu, the suspended police minister, saying that the ANC was at risk of collapse, and, you know, immediately being sort of brought back into line by head office saying you can't say that and it's not true and we must observe discipline. But you can see that the comrades are really getting rattled by all of this bad news, and they're wondering what to do about it.
And in the case of Senzo Mthunu, we're dealing with a man who's been suspended as the Minister of Police because of allegations of criminality or impropriety leading to criminality, which are supposed to be the subject matter of a delayed commission of inquiry.
So there's a personal, there's very much probably a personal element there as well, and factions fighting it out amongst each other. But you point out in your article that the what's unassailable about the ANC's demise or decline is that they have squandered their legitimacy. Now, the first sort of major disclosure of corruption occurred 26 years ago with the arms deal. So just sort of ratcheted up, service delivery has ratcheted down, if you can ratchet down. And it's really been a sort of gathering storm. What is the legitimacy that it can no longer rely upon, that it has actually lost? What was it relying on? What kept it afloat despite this myriad of disasters from a populist point of view that the ANC was in charge of?
Well, it's kind of like a social construct. I think that's a useful term to use here, which is a shared belief in an entity like the ANC. And the shared belief that we as South Africans had is that the ANC has a strong moral legitimacy for having led the country out of apartheid because of its iconic leaders like Nelson Mandela and Tambo, Tutu, I guess, who were figures of great moral virtue and, I think, emulation. And this social construct is now breaking down. So people no longer really think of the ANC as a particularly moral organization or one that embodies the nation in the way that the ANC considers itself to embody the nation. When the ANC speaks about our people, about the people, that doesn't sound quite right anymore when it only got 40% of the vote in the last elections and, you know, I think 16% of eligible voters gave the ANC their vote. And I think that this is the mechanism that is actually the sort of the causal way in which the collapse happens. So you know, why should this happen now? There's been lots of bad news stories for a long time about corruption, about bad service delivery, et cetera, et cetera. Why should it now collapse? And I think the reason for that is precisely that the social construct, this shared belief in the validity, in the competence, in the authority, the legitimacy of the ANC is the thing that is now crumbling. And without it, there's nothing to hold support up. And you'll be able to observe it that the ANC will try to find a response to this, as it must, of course, but that these responses will be met from the public increasingly with a sense of dismissal or contempt or rejection. And this is a very dangerous situation to be in, because the things you're doing, that the ANC is doing, might actually be good things. So they could come up with good plans now, but people are so disillusioned that they'll dismiss even those good plans. And digging yourself out of that situation is really, really tough. And probably that is actually a place where the GNU and the DA and this idea of economic growth is the only path to salvation for the ANC at this stage.
Well, couldn't one most symbolically link it to the really extraordinary response to, I think, what they would have seen as a sort of moral regeneration of credentials, and that was the national dialogue.
Yeah.
I mean, they went there, he took Thabo Mbeki's initiative, and they sort of made it the ANC central, which, of course, immediately started to rot the core idea that the people, the country were talking. It was the ANC was talking and expecting the populace to listen. Mm-hmm. And they convened their first meeting, even though most of the organizations that had joined the national dialogue had walked away, and they essentially got shouted and screamed at by the participants, whether they be individuals or representative groups who did attend the particular gathering.
Yeah. So I think that was a strategic miscalculation on the part of the ANC. Certainly if the intention was to present itself once again as the center of society, as the guiding force for the development of our country, that backfired terribly, because what it became instead is a huge stage with the spotlights trained on it, on which the failings of the ANC are exposed. And that is a bit of a blunder, and maybe also a sign of panic setting in, or certainly a bit of hastiness setting in decision-making that leads to such bad decisions being made. I think that was not a good idea to push ahead with the national dialogue, and it was even a worse idea to continue pushing ahead with it once those foundations had withdrawn their support.
You talked about legitimacy not being a self-renewing resource, and I want to just put a contributing factor, and I'm saying this without necessarily having the proof of the experts on this, but also the fact that you have two things. You have a new generation. You have a post-apartheid generation, a generation that did not grow up under apartheid, and like any major trauma, the feeling, the lived experience. The experience is affected by and tainted by apartheid, but it is not the lived reality of the new generations, the 30-year-olds of now and that sort of age group. And also their parents who did give who gave the ANC their legitimacy and accepted their moral stature as bringing freedom to the country, but they are actually watching the potential for their children, who are not of their generation, doing worse or possibly suffering more as a result of ANC policy over the last 30 years. And that has just reached a point where they're saying, our children, we can't expect, we had better hopes for our children than for ourselves. And we're actually seeing that go backwards. So it's a combination of the parental reaction to it and the expectations of the younger generation itself. They want the jobs, they want to improve the standard of living, their education, etc. And a point has been reached in amongst all the factors that you've mentioned where neither the parents nor the children have faith in they don't accord the legitimacy to the ANC anymore.
Yeah, often a generation is measured as 30 years. And so we're actually now entering the second post-apartheid generation. So they're born free, the kids born in 1994, they're now 31 years old. So they might already have children that are 10 years old. And neither they nor their young children experienced apartheid firsthand. What they have experienced is 31 years of ANC rule. So when they look around themselves and they see the condition of the country and they find things to be unhappy about, it is actually the ANC that they will be blaming. And certainly the ANC will try to pin the blame on apartheid, continue doing that, because that's been a winning formula for many years, but it's becoming increasingly less credible. And I think that is where a lot of the pressure is going to come from. I'd also add one other point to that, which is that often young people like to rebel against their parents. And sort of on the level of society, you'll see young people rebelling against the establishment. And the ANC likes to present itself as a revolutionary movement. But as a matter of fact, it is the establishment. It's been around for 30 years. It's been calling the shots. It has designed effectively the country that we live in today by through its policy decisions and its actions. And so when young people look at this, if they're looking for something to rebel against, the thing that they're going to rebel against is actually going to be the ANC itself. And that is another pressure point for the ANC, one which I think they haven't quite spotted yet or haven't found a response to yet.
And I mean, as the authority weakens, poor choices are made. And one could argue that the response to the United States, to the Trump administration, is an indication of poor choices. It's whatever the administration said would improve the relationship. ANC policy is doubled down on the opposite. The chance of the ANC or the DA, either of them abandoning the GNU and the possibility of the ANC joining up with the MK and the EFF, do they have legs, or are they sort of one-man parties whose future depends entirely on the one man in each party?
Yeah, it's not a great play. And I think it is a plausible play. I do think that there's a lot of unhappiness within the ANC about partnering with the DA. And there are a lot of people inside the ANC who would rather boot out the DA and do something else, you know, either work with smaller parties or work with MK or EFF or both of those. But the thing is, from the perspective of MK and EFF, looking at the ANC, what you're looking at is a sinking ship. So if you're a pirate and you're trying to board another ship that you want to take over, typically you'd choose one that is not currently sinking. You know, you'd sort of board a nice and healthy ship that's full of loot. But instead, what you've got is a sinking ship. At the same time, these pirates, EFF and MK themselves, are also not in great shape. So EFF now is battling because Julius Malema is very much the leader of that party. And the party is focused on his personality and on him as a person, as a charismatic leader. But the departure of many of his lieutenants to MK, I think, is scratching at his aura of authority and invulnerability. Because why would you follow this man into battle when you can't even control his top generals and is losing them? So I think the EFF is in real trouble. I don't know how it's going to find its way out of that. I assume that if the ANC were to offer it a partnership now, it would probably grab it because it would say, you know, at least there's a lifeboat that we can save ourselves on. But it's not great for either side. And I think for MK, that party, I think, is still going to get a bit stronger in the local government elections. But structurally, it has very significant weaknesses. Because it is, in effect, the state capture reunion party. All of the most famous names of the state capture era went to join it. There's a lot of big egos there, a lot of factions, a lot of infighting, and that is going to make it quite hard for that party, I think, to have a long-term future. So overall, ANC, EFF, MK tie-up, I think, is a possibility, but it's not a very strong basis for growth for any of those three parties.
And given the sort of polling figures that have come out that predict between 20% down to 10% vote for the ANC in the local elections, particularly in Johannesburg, is this the DA's opportunity to grab the nettle?
Yeah, it very much is the DA's opportunity, I think, because they offer very much the counter poll to the EFF and MK option. So if you're a South African voter and you're looking at your options, our polling indicates that most South African voters are moderate. So they aspire to the things that most people would aspire to, like a job, a house, clean water, electricity, good education for their children, and decent healthcare. So very ordinary things, one might say. And I'm not sure that there's a lot of confidence that EFF or MK would be able to deliver those things. Probably the faith in the DA that it would be able to do this is much greater. And so I think structurally the DA is setting itself up quite well. The local government elections are especially interesting in this regard because the province of Gauteng is a really weird and interesting province. It only covers 1.5% of South Africa's surface area, but fully 25% of South Africa's population lives in Gauteng. It produces 33% of economic output, and it contributes 48% of personal income tax. So it's a hugely important province. It's also very small. So if you need to go campaigning, you can do it much more effectively here than in the less densely populated provinces. Mm. And it's probably also a bit easier to govern because the distances aren't so great. So given the hypothetical case that the DA managed to become the largest party in Johannesburg, Tshwane, and Ekurhuleni, it would then effectively have taken control of the Gauteng province with all its economic resources, its large population. And I think that would position it very well as a springboard for success in the 2029 elections. The ANC is probably also aware of this and I think knows it has to do something to hang on to Gauteng. But so far, I don't think it's found a good plan to do so.
So finally, other than advising our listeners to buckle up for the next couple of years and probably put a bit of wood between their teeth, what would you advise, how would you advise South Africans to deal with the next couple of years and the momentous changes that look likely to occur?
Yeah, so I think, well, basically keep doing what you're doing as a South African. And that means, you know, keep being resilient Make sure that you've got resources to look out for yourself and your family. Get involved in your community, because as a community, you're stronger than as an individual. Expect things to get worse before they get better. I think that's fair to say. Probably some risk hedging is also good. You know, so whatever options you have in terms of your professional career development, your geographical choices, your income, don't try to keep all your eggs in one basket. Make sure that you've got options. And I think if you do that, then you're quite well positioned to face the challenges and successfully confront them that are going to arise in South Africa, as well as in the rest of the world. Because, of course, the rest of the world is also in a state of turmoil currently. So it's not just us going through some quite exciting times.
John Endres, CEO of the IRR, thank you very much.
Thank you.
IFM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Interesting press release by the National Employers Association of South Africa, which basically is a forum for employers in small and medium-sized companies to advance their interests. They've put out a statement saying that compliance with the new racial quotas is impossible and will spell the downfall of any company that attempts to comply. Now, NIASA, together with Sakalecha, the Afrikaans Business Forum, approached the court to interdict the new regulations which came into effect on the 1st of September. They failed on a technical point, but are proceeding to go to the Constitutional Court over the constitutionality or lack thereof of the regulations requiring the application, the bizarre application of quotas per employment equity legislation. So too are the DA. The DA is going to court also on constitutional grounds. And it's interesting because Sakalecha said that because the regulations came into effect on the 1st of September, the employers need to comply as best as they can and not to go into over planning and strategizing for the future, but keep within the law in the meantime as best as possible. But I think NIASA is making a very important point in advising employers not to abandon the principle of merit-based employment, given the government's sort of bizarre transformation drive, which is a transformation into nothing, as far as I'm concerned. Both NIASA and the Sakalecha have vowed to carry on fighting, and the process that must be followed of preparing employment equity plans for the next 5 years has to continue or has to be embarked upon, but at a very realistic, measured pace because this legislation is being challenged. They make the point, and I think this is really obvious, that compliance with racial quotas is impossible, and it will result, if one does it, in the downfall of any company that attempts to comply with it. I mean, the regulations to some extent are designed to acknowledge an industry's access to the necessary skills, but you have this bizarre situation where it put percentages on how many people in different racial groups you're allowed to employ in an industry at a certain level, and certainly at the higher levels, in fact, any level, because it basically encourages a purely racist result. White men have almost no hope. And so I think they're absolutely right. I think that comply to the extent that you appear to be able to, but do not abandon those principles, because at the end of the day, the success of society depends on the success of the private sector. The government is really driving us to failure.
Get down to the Bluebird Shopping Centre now. Let us be a part of your journey with your little one and give them all they need with great savings on big brands. Experience a wide range of baby products for every precious moment, from bath time to bedtime and meal times to play times. Baby City has your needs covered. Get to Baby City Athol at the Bluebird Shopping Centre for everything you need from South Africa's leading baby hyper. Baby City, we know you care.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Well, perhaps the good news of the week is the fact that the South African Communist Party has decided to contest the local elections separate from the ANC. Now, this is good news because, first of all, the SACP has always used the ANC as its access to power. It's almost, it's like a you know, the ANC is like a host, and the SACP has clung on like a parasite, which has been useful because it has given the ANC its moribund and useless economic policy and contributed to all the policies that are taking us down at the moment, not least of which is BEE. But it's provided for many years the sort of intellectual background to where the ANC was and where it went. And I suppose the only good thing that could be said about the SACP is that it convinced the ANC to become a multiracial party back in the late 60s, early 70s. Now, this is interesting, and I think it's positive because also I suspect that the SACP will not be particularly successful. I do not believe that the dissatisfaction that we've spoken so much about amongst the general population and the disillusion with the ANC coalition is going to actually garner votes for the SACP and least of all for the ANC. So they're sort of battling against each other on policy that has been seen to be completely a failure for the country. So perhaps one has to cheer it on, and despite their sort of trying to be purer than the driven snow as the sort of intellectual underpinnings, they've had a lion's share of ministerial portfolios, and there have been allegations against Chairperson Bladen Zamandi, for one, of corruption and misuse of funds, and Deputy National Chairperson of all people, Gulas Ngesi, who is the Minister of Labour and Employment, ironically, after 2019, who was zealous about the implementation of BEE, but who said absolutely nothing about the state of our unemployment, and particularly our youth unemployment continued to grow. He and others were absolutely deaf to the fact that every measure they put in place, whether it was BEE, a relatively substantial minimum wage, etc., was, you know, we're going to make changes, and if it failed year on, and now we've hit an implosion point, virtually. I don't know if anyone remembers that the Communist Party defended the ANC government's decision to implement e-tolling in Gauteng. That despite the fundamental point, and this always goes to the question of to what extent the communist ideology actually supports the public, and that is that charging people for the public use of the public good is the very antithesis of what a communist party should stand for. I don't know on what basis the SACP believes it has any track record to point to. Its track record is innately linked to the ANC's, and you know, it's tainted thereby. So maybe we should all be very pleased that there is that schism, and that hopefully both parties will fail at the last hurdle. Well, it'll be good for at least our contestation, if nothing else. But it does mean getting more liberal, classically liberal views into power. With that and that reminder that the voting is in our hands and every vote counts and every vote is equal, I hope that you found the last hour valuable, and I hope to see you again next week. And this is Sarah Gone from Sarah Gone Rogue wishing you well.